The following 15 minutes have been sponsored by the People's Progressive Party of Washington and the Progressive Party of Oregon for a campaign address by Henry A. Wallace, Progressive Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. Mr. Wallace is speaking from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. The program will be opened by Mr. William S. Gailmore.
Peace, not war. Freedom, not fear. Abundance, not scarcity. We of the Progressive Party take great pride in presenting the former Vice President of the United States, the Progressive Party candidate for President, Henry A. Wallace. On all of his radio programs, Mr. Wallace has asked you, the people, to write your questions to him, to tell him how you feel about things. Tonight, Mr. Wallace will let some of these letters speak for themselves, some out of the thousands of letters he has received from you. Ladies and gentlemen, Henry A. Wallace.
So many billions of words are written, broadcast and published every day, in magazines, newspapers, and on the air. But I wonder whether other words, words that never break into print, are never spoken in the professional tones of radio, are not more important. I mean the words that ordinary people write to friends. I mean the millions of letters that pass between Americans, the private opening up between people in a personal note. Tonight, I would like to share some of these precious words with you aloud. For since we've founded the Progressive Party and gave voice to the deep-seated desire all over America that there should be a new and positive voice in American politics, there have come to me letters, the like of which I've never seen. They write of simple things, the price of food, the hope that their sons will not be drafted, the desire to vote, the despair and helplessness they feel when they try to find decent housing, the fear of war. They write of sickness in their families, of fear that is worse than sickness. A woman from Philadelphia says, "We little people gained nothing in defeating Hitler, not even the release from fear of fascism." And a woman from St. Paul puts it another way. "Plain people," she writes, "keep the world sort of sane. After all, most of us hanker after just good, plain jobs, food, recreation. We live in a five-room house and own it since 1928. By the skin of our teeth, we beat the Depression at that time. But here we have a brand new depression, poverty amidst plenty, a monstrosity for which we haven't found a remedy. All I know is that people are not happy." And then they write about prices. One woman puts it this way. "I go to the butcher shop. I see meat so fat I can hardly tell where the lean part is. We're paying T-bone prices for gristle and bone and fat." Then they write to me of intimidation. A student at Louisiana State University tells me, "I spent 33 months in Navy service, 27 months of which was spent in the Pacific Theater. Because I helped organize the students for Wallace, I was approached by two agents from the FBI. They asked me, 'Are you a communist?' 'Sir, what this underhanded coercion amounts to is naked thought control. I protest this fear technique by agents of the FBI.' And now let me read you a passage from a moving, somewhat pathetic letter. 'I'm a girl, 11 years old, and I go to a school in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. Our teacher asked if we knew a political man that was sympathetic toward the communists. A boy said, 'Henry Wallace.' Teacher asked us to raise our hands if we thought that Wallace was sympathetic toward the Reds. Everyone raised their hands except Harmon, a friend of mine, and myself. The teacher gave us a dirty look. But Harmon and I wear our Wallace buttons and kids call us communists. But it doesn't matter. We know you are not for communism and hope you win." A World War I veteran says, "I'm 55 years old. Factory don't want me to work. Say I'm too old, which isn't true. I can get a flunky job, but that won't pay my bills." A postal clerk from Tacoma, Washington. "Can you imagine a new man, a postal clerk, taking a job for $2,100 a year? That's the starting salary of a post office clerk, and $3,400 for top grade after 30 years. And he ends the letter, as so many have, with this statement,
I'm not signing my name, as this government loyalty business might make me out to be a Russian commie. It's getting to be bad, darn bad, Mr. Wallace, when we government workers can lose our liberty if we practice freedom of speech. Man writes from New York. I'm an old man, work with a lot of old men, and appeal to you to see about an old age pension of not less than $100 per month, so we could enjoy sunshine and fresh air the remaining days. Why pour money down foreign rat holes? Truman's spending billions to kill. Why not spend millions to let us live? Or are we again the forgotten men? A man from Jamesboro, Arkansas, an RFD address says, I've known and experienced the evils of the two old parties, being a poor common laboring man. I've worked for $1 a day, cleared land for $5 an acre. I have saw the poor old Negro work for 75 cents or $1, take his pay in a coupon book and trade at the grocery store. I have and am yet seeing a land of plenty being absorbed and controlled by politicians and money grubbers. A land in many places filled with uneducated children. And I've received letters filled with bitter irony, like this one from Chattanooga, Tennessee. I want to ask you a question. I'm a Negro boy myself. Do you think a Negro should fight for freedom for America and then come back and be afraid of his house being burned down? And the wonderful thing is that the answers to these questions and problems raised by ordinary people are given by ordinary people in the suggestions they make to me in their letters. And this is something the politicians and professional speechmakers of the two major parties can never understand, that the people have the answers. And in their letters to me, the people demonstrate again and again that they know you cannot have low prices if millions of men are producing armaments which cannot be eaten or worn or lived in. They know you can't have low prices or decent homes when you load a government with bankers and generals, as Truman has done, and Dewey would continue to do. They know that votes for either Truman or Dewey are votes for the draft. They know that a government which makes deals with Franco-Spain and fascist Greece, with feudal Turkey and reactionary China, has only contempt for people. And how then can a Negro or a Mexican or a Puerto Rican or Indian expect anything but secondary citizenship when the government is in such hands? Nor are the people deceived by the scare headlines, by the loud cries of red and communist. Again and again, the answers are given in the simple and direct words that people put down in their letters. An 80-year-old woman writes, I am old and entirely blind, but it is so simple. If we could get along peacefully with the old czarist form of government in Russia as we did for so many years, we surely ought to be able to do so under the Soviet regime, which, however prejudiced one may be, one must admit is a great improvement over old czarist days. The woman writes from Florence, Mississippi. Rights of racial prejudice. I'm a Christian, and I believe most firmly in the brotherhood of man. I'm white by race, but I've always been shocked and repelled by racial prejudice. I cannot vote for you, since I was told at the polls last fall that since I have not voted hitherto, I'm only 25, I must wait 2 years before voting in order to show 2 poll tax receipts. So I'm writing to say I admire your courageous stand on the rights of the people, all the people. A woman from Santa Clara, California, writes of the importance of your vote for the Progressive Party. She begins, When I voted for the first time 4 years ago, I cast my ballot for someone who stood for all the things I wanted and believed in, and I shall have that pleasure this time. And when the returns are counted, I am confident that the American people will be very surprised at the number of ballots cast for the Progressive Party. More and more of my neighbors are seeing the need to vote progressive if they want to be counted for peace. They won't waste their precious votes supporting the draft and the militarization of our beloved country. And then this, one of the most moving letters I've ever received. I'm a 24-year-old Air Corps officer of the last war. At present, a $45-a-week stock clerk in Los Angeles. Due to my inability to secure a house, I at present call home a 22-foot trailer. I'm not a communist. I've never known, to my knowledge, a communist. But because of airing my views in your behalf recently after dinner, I was called a communist. Now, you and I know that the only way to quell this gigantic smear campaign is by bringing out the authentic facts for others to see. And this, I know, takes financial backing. So I'm enclosing half of my last 8 months' savings. I've been saving in anticipation of the birth of my first child. But I've made arrangements to take care of that obligation at the rate of $20 a month, and am instead directing it toward another great and worthy cause. I offer this money as a token of my belief that you will help keep America as it is and not haunted by the spirit of additional dead lost in an unnecessary cause. Judging from my correspondence, I now think more and more of our ministers are realizing that we have failed to practice in our society the brotherhood of man. A churchman in Maryland writes, "We must shout from the housetops the message of Jesus. His spirit of love in men's hearts will raise the morale of the world and solve our social problems." A minister from Bureau County, Illinois, "If you don't mind, I'll be a fellow traveler with you. This is for the record. I believe that corruption and militarism are a vastly greater threat to the world than communism." I think such spirit and understanding show that we cannot lose, for it is the hope of the rulers of the two parties that the people will never realize their strength. They use their press, their magazines, their radio to sow confusion, because the thing they most fear is truth and the strength of the people. But the people, including the children, know the truth, and they're saying it louder and louder every day. And on election day, the gentlemen of the bipartisan foreign and domestic policy will know that millions of people see through them, that millions of people have voted for themselves, have voted progressive, that millions have made their votes count for peace.
If you want to make your vote count for peace, for freedom, for abundance, vote progressive. A progressive vote, a vote for Wallace and Taylor, is a vote against the draft, against billions of dollars for war, against milk at 22 cents a quart. Don't waste your vote. Make it count in the fight for lasting peace. Henry Wallace answers your questions on national broadcasts 5 times each week. Check your local papers for time and station. And be sure to listen to Mr. Wallace over CBS, same station, same time, next Wednesday. These broadcasts are made possible by voluntary contributions from Wallace supporters all over the country. Mr. Wallace invites you to write him your questions to 39 Park Avenue, New York City, New York. Remember, don't waste your vote. Make it count for peace. Vote Wallace and Taylor in 48.
You have just heard an address by Henry A. Wallace, Progressive Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. Time for this campaign address by Mr. Wallace was sponsored by the People's Progressive Party of Washington and the Progressive Party of Oregon. Mr. Wallace was introduced by Mr. William S. Gailmore of the Progressive Party. We return you now to New York.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.